For the last 4 years, you came to this podcast to get your needs met, to be fulfilled, to get a pro wrestling, pop culture, and that oh-so-naughty feeling tingled inside with a little bit of crass sprinkled on top. Now it's time for your hosts, Chad Allen, Shelly Allen, Zach Romero, and Luna Lynn. You are tuned in to the IndieCast.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome once again to the IndieCast. Chad Allen, and the room's empty. It's actually just me today. It's a Barbara Walters special today, as I have a guest on the show with us tonight. From Chikara, for those of you that have been listening to our show for all four, heading into 5 years, actually. We hit our fifth season in May here. Get ready for special stuff coming up for that. But one of the first things we always said was all roads lead to Chikara, and nothing is different on that instance here. As we have that old juke joint himself, Lucas Calhoun, joining us on the show today. Lucas, welcome to the IndieCast.
Hey, Chad, baby. How you doing, Daddy?
Excellent. So, Lucas, just to let you know, we start every episode the same way with usually five kind of quick questions we like to call the lightning round.
All right.
It's the way we get rid of those kind of basic podcast questions to get them just out of the way. It's basically our vegetables before dinner. So I'm going to go ahead and get to those right now. You can answer them as quickly, as short as you want, and we will go from there. So question one, who trained you and when did you debut?
So I'm not a Wrestle Factor graduate like a lot of the guys in Chikara. Believe it or not, I was trained years and years and years ago by a now defunct group in Virginia, the Global Wrestling Alliance. And to put it like this, the Wrestling Alliance, their big claim to fame was that the one of the women who trained me, I don't know if you recall, many years ago on Raw, they had a wrestling match with a Donald Trump impersonator, who I believe was Ace Steele, and he wrestled a Rosie O'Donnell impersonator.
I sadly do remember this match.
Well, if you remember that match, then you saw one of the women who trained me, Kylie McLean, and that was kind of that whole crew's big claim to fame. And I actually debuted. I made my pro debut, believe it or not, in 2002.
Okay. And do you remember what your first your first opponent was?
Yeah, it was a guy. Man, you know, kind of a guy that I don't think anybody's ever heard of. Boy's name was Spock Holly.
Spock Holly?
Spock Holly.
Tell me this was a Star Wars gimmick, or a Star Trek gimmick, because that would make my day if it was.
And unfortunately, no such joy to be
Darn.
Had there. He was kind of like a Hollywood superstar type.
Okay. Question number two, what is your first wrestling memory?
My first wrestling memory, I think it gets jumbled up in my head. It's one of two things. It's either my dad taking me to a show at the Norfolk Scope. I think it was a WCW show. And it had to be, it had to be in like the mid to late 80s, I think, by that point. I cannot recall, for the life of me, I have the worst memory, I think, of anybody you probably ever talked to. And I can't for the life of me remember anything about the card. I think it's jumbled up with watching pay-per-views, old WWF pay-per-views, at my folks' house, when the pay-per-view started kind of screwing up and I couldn't get the visual. but I was listening to the sound anyway because I was so infatuated and had to hear them calling a demolition tag team match.
Nice.
My memory is truly, truly, truly awful. Those are kind of the earliest things that I can remember about pro wrestling.
Okay. Question number three. This one's going to probably hit a little close to home. What is Elvis's best song ever?
Oh, it's Viva Las Vegas.
No, okay.
All day, every day. It's hard to. There's a lot of close second places in there. You know, all of his kind of standard go tos, Jailhouse Rock, Blue Suede Shoes. All of those are really solid songs, but I think nothing jumps out and hits me hard like Viva Las Vegas does.
So definitely more of an older Elvis then. So kind of the gold lamé jacket type of Elvis fan.
Yeah, no, 50,000 Elvis fans can't be wrong and all that, baby.
Because I was always a Suspicious Minds has always been my favorite, but that's
that's also a good one too. a little slowing it down a little bit, huh?
Sticking with the kind of the Vegas theme, then. Thank you for helping me segue, and you didn't even know you were doing it. When you're in Vegas, what's your go-to casino?
You know, I don't have really a go-to. The places that I've stayed in Vegas that I like a lot. You know, we were just at out there at Viva Las Vegas, the Rockabilly Weekender, and we stayed at the Gold Coast and split our time kind of between there and Orleans. And both of those are kind of off the strip a little bit, so I kind of dug that because they weren't quite as crazy, they weren't quite as jam packed. But I was always, I always liked when I went and hung out at, just outside of Treasure Island.
Yeah.
And I used to watch the old pirate show they had in there.
Oh yeah.
So I'm kind of all over the place when it comes to Vegas. As long as there's a strong theme and there's not too many people there. However, I've been told, I've been warned that I have to stay away from casinos for a little while now. Because one of the last times that I was in Vegas, I put $1,000 on black and playing roulette, and it hit red. And Mrs. Calhoun was none too pleased with me. So I've got to stay away from gambling for a little bit, I think.
Are you planning on suing Wesley Snipes for telling you to always bet on black?
No, you know, that was my own mistake. I specifically, when we went out there for our wedding, I specifically put that money aside because, number one, it's a cool story, right? It's fun to be able to say, hey, I just lost $1,000 in one roll. But number two, it was less about winning or losing that money, but it was more about that 10 seconds when the ball is rolling around, it was absolute sheer terror. And that's more the experience that I was going to get for it, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just watching, waiting for that thing to stop was got to be.
Waiting for the ball to stop and waiting for my wife to hit me in the back of the head.
Yeah.
That was.
Why drink when you've got that going for you? You're on a high for the rest of the day after that. So.
Right, exactly.
You mentioned something else here I'm going to circle back around to after I get done with this last question here. And this one's become a very interesting topic on this show lately, and I wish I could remember who brought it up the first time, but when you're eating cereal, do you put the cereal in the bowl first and then milk, or do you put the milk in first and then pour in the cereal?
I don't want to meet the monster that puts the milk in first and then the cereal.
Thank you. Like, okay.
That is a travesty. Like, that's the kind of person that I think has got to be, like, raised in the woods and has never seen cereal before in their life, and they don't understand how it works. It's cereal in first and then milk, man, all the way.
Okay. which is the correct answer, but there are definitely, like you said, there are some monsters out there that for some reason put the milk in first. And yeah, I think that's communism at the highest level.
Right. So, I mean, some people do. They just want to turn all society's norms right on their ears just for fun.
As they said in Batman, some people just want to watch the world burn, and apparently that's how they're planning on doing it. Tell me a little bit about, and this is not wrestling related in any way, shape, or form, but I'm interested. Tell me about the you were at a rockabilly, like a rockabilly weekend. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh man, it was dude, it was awesome. We had such a great time. So we flew out to Vegas. It was last Thursday we flew out, and the festival is Viva Las Vegas, rockabilly weekend, and this one, it's been going on for 21 years now. This is the Viva Las Vegas 21 was this year. And man, it was just jam-packed the whole weekend. It was anytime you wanted to, there was a band playing that you could go see. Saturday was a giant car show. And so I went out and kind of wandered around, and I interviewed a couple guys about the cars that they had. And just saw a whole bunch of really, really, really cool rides. I mean, the whole weekend, everybody is done up all the way to the nines. You don't leave your hotel room without your hair looking right, without your clothes looking right. It's just absolutely fantastic weekend. Saturday, during the car show, they had Jerry Lee Lewis play. You know, old rockabilly legend, and believe it or not, like this one may or may not hit people as hard as it hit, you know, hit me. But they had the Stray Cats headline the car show, and you know those guys haven't played together as a group in I think 13 years up until Viva Las Vegas. At a certain point watching their set, I just kind of like. I kind of stopped and looked around to take everything in. You know, you're surrounded by people. I mean, like it was packed full of people, and it's outside in the evening, and it's just nice and cool, and they're playing in this kind of parking lot space in front of the Orleans Arena, and I just like, you know, the car show is the backdrop to everything, and I just looked around and was just totally amazed that anything like this could even exist. It was just an absolutely fantastic weekend, man. Saw some really, really, really great bands that you know I wasn't familiar with prior to going there. Sunday they do a big pool party at the Orleans, so everybody's out there in like vintage 50s swimwear. Man, you know, bands are playing. Like they had a couple like surf bands playing. During the pool party, it was just an absolutely killer time.
Okay. So I have a bunch of follow up questions on this one then. Jerry Lee Lewis got to be in his what upper 80s, almost early 90s now, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So did he still like? Is he still kicking over the piano bench and doing all that, or is it a little past his time for that?
Well, it's a little past his time. He's not quite as ruckus as it used to be, you know. But I mean, he's still got chops, man. Like he's still up there putting on a great show, going hard. Like you wouldn't believe it. There's still a lot of energy, and all of his songs carry that kind of same power that he used to have, even without his like on stage antics. It was great just, you know, just hearing how in good health, you know, for a guy his age, he was, it was really awesome to see.
Stray Cat. So with Brian Setzer, obviously.
Yes.
So it played all the hits, I'm assuming. Do you have a preference between the Stray Cats or Brian Setzer Orchestra, though not officially rockabilly? I guess that would be more. I don't know what you would consider that, but that's like,
you know, it's hard to overlook for me like the weight that the Stray Cats carry in like just the rockabilly scene in general. You know what I mean? Like they were kind of one of the first real like mainstream bands in America to even have that rockabilly sound, and I think that just carries a lot of weight for me. You know, I go Stray Cats over Brian Setzer Orchestra. Pretty easily. Just, you know, I don't think that the Brian Setzer Orchestra that kind of had. I don't think they quite had the impact. Cats had, you know?
No, no. And don't get me wrong, I agree, though I never have gotten to see the Stray Cats in concert, sadly, but definitely got to see Brian Setzer Orchestra based off of my knowledge of the Stray Cats. Right. And he puts on a great show. No matter what his setup is, he puts on an amazing show. And then last question on this here, and then we might actually ask some wrestling questions.
I'll talk about music all night, man. I really will.
That's okay. We've done it before. Don't feel bad if we do. What's one band that you saw there that you hadn't seen before that you would recommend recommending some of our audience to go look up?
Oh man, this one right here. There's two. I didn't get to see one of them, but so the one that I got to see that I was not familiar with prior to Viva Las Vegas was a band called Shanda and the Howlers. And I actually recorded an interview with them that I'm actually need to edit and probably release here soon. But one of the things that really grabbed me about this band, and if you go listen to them, like obviously on a rockabilly theme fest, right, you get a lot of traditional sound in rockabilly bands, right? And not in a negative way necessarily, but a lot of traditional rockabilly bands have a very similar sound. They don't really deviate too terribly much off of, you know, that kind of standard rockabilly sound. But Shanda and the Howlers, they have this really, really, really crazy way of kind of infusing a lot of like 60s soul and blues, and just like it's all carried kind of on the back of Shanda's just amazing singing ability. Like she, like we were watching, you know, we were watching their set, and they played a song off of an album I think they just released, and Shanda's voice like hit Mrs. Calhoun so hard that she literally just like she just stopped moving and was like staring at her while she's singing. It was just an amazing set. Like their sound is so crazy. And the whole band is just super, super talented. But really, like it if you hear it, man, it's driven home by Shanda's vocals. So yeah, I was, if you guys are looking for something, man, go check out Shanda and the Howlers. Those guys are absolutely phenomenal, and they've got a sound just unlike anybody I've heard in years.
I'll be interested. I will look them up on Spotify a little later then, see if I can pull some of them up. I know I've heard the name before. I feel like they've been on a soundtrack to a movie I've seen or something like that, but I don't know why it's not connecting with me. So I'm sure it'll hit me as soon as we end the podcast, and then I'll go, oh, that's what it was. Because that's usually how it works. So, okay, well, let me try to awkwardly segue into actual wrestling stuff. Now, obviously, when you came into Chikara, which is where, obviously, a lot of people know you from here, you did not start out as Lucas Calhoun. You started out under a mask, under another kind of famous Chikara character. Tell us a little bit about your time as Vulgar.
Well, you know, at the time that I was kind of in Chikara, I was working for the Flood. It was kind of a rough time for me, I'm not gonna lie. I've been pulled out of my bouncing gig by Jimmy Jacobs, and recruited as kind of a hitman for the Flood. And I just, you know, my assignments were just kind of largely just being real physical and being real crazy violent with people. It's kind of an unfortunate period of time for me, I'm not gonna lie. Like it's much better and brighter, I suppose now, even with my most recent revelations that frankly all of that was just implanted memories. And none of it actually happened.
So, do you regret that time frame under the mask? Let me flip that question around a little bit. Was there anything that you took out of it that maybe was a positive looking back at it?
a sense, yes. I mean, during that period of time, I was kind of under the command of Jimmy Jacobs and of Eddie Kingston. Obviously, once he got kind of brought into the fold as well, and evil though that time was, there's a great deal to take away from the two of them, right? Just listening to how they kind of like strategize and plan and talk about bringing people down, like these are men that are just incredibly smart about not only the physical aspect of pro wrestling, but like the mental aspect of pro wrestling and getting into their opponents' heads and really undermining anybody else's game plan. So there was an awful lot to just absorb right then. That's probably the only, I feel like probably the only positive of that dark time, you know, for me.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, and like you said, it's definitely a dark time, but when you're working with minds like Eddie Kingston and like Jimmy Jacobs, it's hard not to learn something from it even in that situation.
Right.
Now, obviously, kind of tell us a little bit about taking the mask off and becoming what I'm assuming, obviously, especially since you just spent a weekend at a rockabilly, you know, at a rockabilly weekend, is probably a little more you. Tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of getting the opportunity to, you know, show off more of yourself now that you're out of that dark time.
Well, I mean, first of all, we should probably explain, I guess, the concept of you. As it relates to me, is a little bit of a mire right now, right?
Okay.
So when Kevin Condren talked me into removing the mask, he did so by reminding me of memories that I had of working in a bar. And being a big fan of doing Elvis karaoke, obviously, and just how big of a fan of the King I was, and how I have more to show off than, you know, being under a mask and in that silver suit. And I embraced it, like, gratefully. You know, it once I was kind of, like, broken of that spell a little bit, you know, it felt good to release and kind of be who I was. Now, obviously, recently, we find out that who I thought I was, again, was all implanted memories, because here I am, the revelation that I'm a clone. You know, I was created in a lab by Tidor as kind of the next in the line of Volgars, and so it took a little bit of, you know, it took a little bit of searching, I think, to really cement the fact that I am, you know, I am who I am, and I am who I'm portraying, right? Like, I am. Obviously, I like this music. Obviously, I like this lifestyle. Obviously, I like old cars. So that was, you know, that was, it, you know, like I said, it gets to be a little bit of a minefield there, kind of figuring out who I am, you know, in reality. But I tell you, kind of back on point, like, it's been great to be able to kind of step out from that, you know, that vulgar, I'll refer to it as a situation, I suppose, you know, that vulgar situation, and be able to kind of show out a little bit more and have a little bit more color and showmanship in my performances. You know, that's definitely been a big boost for me, I feel.
Do you ever worry that because now you know what you know with, you know, with the you know, knowing that you are, I mean, it's, I understand that you're a clone. I mean, you're still your own, you're still your own man. I think that goes without saying. But knowing that, you know, your creation was the way it was, do you ever get worried about, like, a relapse? You know, maybe going back to what you were originally created for? Is that a thing?
Well, that concern is certainly always in the back of my mind, right? Like, you have to know that, like, the things that I've done as Volgar, I don't get away from that, right? I don't forget for a second the things that I did in that mask and in that suit. However, I've also got to remember that I've got a path in front of me now, and I've got rely on that. I have to really believe in that, you know, to kind of carry me forward. If I have a second of self doubt, like, man, I'm, you know, I might slip back into old habits, or maybe it might be possible for me to fall back in, you know, with that group, then you know, that I've already kind of stumbled and lost my way at that point. So I have to put those thoughts out of my mind and just believe in the path that I'm on.
Right. Well, let's talk a little about the path that you're on right now. Is leading to a very big event in for Chikara coming up at the time of our recording, this coming Saturday, I do believe. Tell everybody a little bit about the show that Chikara has coming up and explain kind of how it works, because this is definitely an interesting spectacle, I think I would call it. I think it's even beyond it being just a match.
Spectacle is pretty much the right way to put it, I think. You're right. No, so Saturday is the Infinite Gauntlet. It's the annual Infinite Gauntlet match. And it works in a very similar way to kind of a Royal Rumble-style match, right? So you've got 33 competitors in the match, and every 88 seconds, another one will enter. And the way that it differs from the standard kind of Royal Rumble or Battle Royal type match is you can be eliminated not only by being thrown over the top rope, but also by getting pinned or being submitted. And that makes for a lot of interesting situations. Like, you see some real strange bedfellows pairing up in order to, you know, dogpile somebody to pin them, or kind of holding people back to save folks from eliminations, you know, if partners or allies are in the ring together. It makes for a really interesting time in the ring, because you know that you're not just looking out for somebody to, like, you know, hook you over the top rope, but, you know, suddenly you've got to look out for actually getting hit with something out of nowhere and getting pinned, or you know, somebody locking something on and you having to submit because you're in the middle of the ring and you can't get to anywhere, you know. It definitely is a tough match. That is the truth.
And how many of these have you been in so far?
So this will be my third one.
Okay.
I have not done so well in the previous Infinite Gauntlets, you know, if I'm being honest, I'm not too concerned with winning this one. Not this year. So Professor Nicodemus, the man who created myself and who created Jeremy Leary, the next iteration in the Volgar line, he's entered his crew of three new science monsters in the Infinite Gauntlet, in an attempt to prove the superiority of his science and win the golden opportunity, a chance to, you know, challenge for any title they like. In my mission right now, the path that I'm on, the destiny that I have, is tied up in making sure that that doesn't happen. So victory is second in my mind. Making sure that those guys don't win is first.
Okay. Now, my big concern would be in that instance is there are three of Nicodemus's Proteus Wheel group, and only one of you. Do you have any plans of backup or anything like that to be able to assist you with that? Because that's a lot to deal with. And on top of that, I do know that Professor Nicodemus just recently, I think I saw this video on Twitter, has, I guess, done something to the artist formerly known as Troll. I believe he called him Trollzilla at the end of it.
Yeah.
And so now he's kind of got that, and then obviously that's a relationship with Whisper as well. So what are your thoughts on, like, you know, not that I don't think your skills could handle it, but that's a lot of, you know, the numbers game starts to add up after a while, no matter how good you are.
Man, that poor Troll, man, he has been through so much in the past few years. Subjugation at the hands of the Flood. You know, he was hanging out with Kevin Condon for a bit, and then got lost when you know, Snowflake appeared and, you know, disappeared. And now kind of the same deal, like subjugation almost at the hands of the Whisper, right? And now experimented on and turned into this Trollzilla, it remains to be seen, I guess, what Nicodemus did with him. But man, it's a shame either way. But to your point, yes, you are correct. I'm definitely outgunned. I'm certainly outweighed. But I do have Jeremy Leary backing me up, and the two of us are in the Infinite Gauntlet. Obviously, we don't know quite yet where we're going to be entering, if we're going to be drawing numbers that are close to each other, if we're going to be on opposite ends of the order. But the hope is, with somebody else there watching my back, the numbers game might take a little bit less of a toll.
Okay.
You know, and again, I've got to put all of my belief in this plan that I've got to, you know, that I'm here. My purpose here is to stop those boys. And by hook or by crook, I guess I'm going to do it.
Well, we wish you luck in that setup, and hopefully, like, you can, you know, maybe kill multiple birds with one stone. It's more than just two birds here that you can hopefully, you know, keep the Proteus Wheel at bay, and then still be able to turn around and win this for yourself as well. Because obviously, there's a pretty big prize at the end of this. At the end of that gauntlet.
Correct. Right. The golden opportunity. The ability to challenge. The opportunity to challenge for any title. You know, the Campeonato de Parejas, or the Grand Championship, I guess, in my case, because I'm a little too. I'm not sure that I qualify for the Young Lions Cup anymore. but either one of those, you know, coming up at the end, and that's huge, you know, like just being able to kind of, you know, in effect, skip the line. Now, I feel like you probably have to strategize and wait a little bit if I do win, because I'm not sure that it's going to be terribly easy to dethrone old Juan Francisco. And those closer cats, baby, those guys are all business. And I'm not super sure that I'd want to tangle with them currently in my current state either.
And it's very interesting you mentioned Juan Francisco de Coronado, who's obviously been now, I believe, over a year as Chikara Grand Champion. Do you think if you were to win this, that would be the way you would go? Would be heading dead on to Juan Francisco?
Man, that's a tough call. You know, me and Juan, we locked up only once so far, and he beat me pretty square. You know, I he got me in that Coronado clutch, and boy, that hurt. So I'm not super sure, man. Like it feels like it would be it feels like it would be a high honor, you know, to beat Chikara Grand Champion for certain. I'm not super sure if maybe it's a smarter play for me and old Jeremy Leary to try to go after those campeonatos.
You know, and that's one thing I've always loved about Chikara, because like you said, you know obviously you've got, you know, Jeremy Leary to team with there, but I've always found it very interesting at Chikara that for the longest time all they had was the tag belt. So I almost feel like some days that holding those Campeonatos de Parejas is sometimes the bigger, you know, kind of notch on your white sequined belt, as it were. So,
well, I guess you kind of have to weigh on one hand, you know, the lineage, I guess the length of time that, those tag belts have been in existence, right? Like they've been around for a great deal of Chikara's history. And you have to kind of balance that, I suppose, with the names of the folks that have had the grand championship. You know, sure. I mean, think about it, like Eddie Kingston, Hala Wicked, Kimberly, you know, now Juan. Like these guys are like these guys are pretty much the best of the best in Chikara.
Very
you know,
true.
And getting able to, you know, being able to put your name on that list alongside those folks. I mean, that's, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at by itself. So yeah, I mean, it's a tough call, man. Looking at it on the face, it's hard to say which way I would go.
So, well, taking that out of the Infinite Gauntlet out of the equation, kind of what are your plans for Chikara, you know, from after this point? I mean, it's pretty much straight on to dealing with the Proteus wheel, or do you have anything else kind of in sight that you, that you'd like to make your, short and or long-term goals?
No, I think right now it's, you know, my attention is pretty much entirely focused on the Proteus wheel. New director of fun, Bryce Remsburg, has, I guess, made the call that the Proteus wheel haven't done anything necessarily wrong on the surface just yet. I mean, he doesn't understand Nicodemus the way that I do, so I guess I can understand his point of view there. But we got to work to stop them boys, because they're evil manifested, man. Like, those guys are absolutely here just to wreck the place, and people are going to see that sooner rather than later, I feel. So for right now, man, like it's all about just kind of marshaling me and Leary to stop those guys and put the beat down on those science monsters as hard as we can.
Do you think the Proteus wheel is a bigger threat than the flood was?
In terms of, they're a different threat.
Okay.
In terms of pure kind of direct offense, the flood was a bigger threat. You know, the flood had marshaled together all of Chikara's kind of biggest enemies. You know, you had the BDK and Sidney Macabella's Devastation Corporation and all these guys kind of teamed together to just form this just massive fist that was ready to punch Chikara right in the face. The Proteus wheel, headed up by Nicodemus, man, these guys are they're more of a knife in the dark.
Okay.
They're coming in under the, you know, they're coming in under the guise of not necessarily being directly evil, but man, like, they're there, you know, and you saw like they're there twisting guys up, like, you know, whatever Nicodemus did to the troll, this is not going to end well for anybody, you know, and putting that offer out there to be a power broker, for members of the Chikara roster. That's just going to be bending guys to his will if anybody takes him up on that deal. So they're kind of a more taking a different approach that's slightly more insidious, I think.
Right.
Than the Flood was.
No, very true. Well, Lucas, we are at the point here where we have a few questions we tend to end every episode with here. The first one is one we lovingly refer to as the Trevin Adams Memorial question, even though Trevin is not actually dead. The first question here on this one, you've obviously been doing this for quite a while. As you said earlier, you've, as Uncle Bob Evans likes to say, you've done the drives. Sometimes while you're driving, it's late at night, let's say 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and you suddenly get those rumblies in your tumbly a little bit there. As you come over a hill, you see a shining beacon in front of you of joy and wondrousness. Is that shining beacon a Sheetz, or is it a Wawa?
Ooh. You're trying to give me some enemies with this one, huh? it's a Sheetz.
Yes.
It's definitely a Sheetz. Like, I will go to a Wawa. I will go to a Wawa heavily around Thanksgiving time when they have the turkey bowl back. But if I'm looking for somewhere to stop on my way to or from the next venue, I'm looking for a Sheetz.
There we go. See, and I'm glad that I was the host for this episode today, because in my opinion, that is the one and only correct answer. First question of our infamous final two questions. This one starts a little dark, so I apologize in advance.
All right, I'm ready for it.
In this wonderful performance art that we call professional wrestling that we all love, sadly, we do lose a lot of talent early. So with that being said, if there was anybody who is no longer with us in the wrestling industry that you could have worked with, sat down and talked with, learned from, who would that person be and why?
So I've got two answers to this question. I've got two because the first one, I don't think anybody's going to really know. Back in my younger days, there used to be a guy, and it's actually really fitting that we're doing this interview in May. There was a guy that I knew that I wrestled with. His real name was George. His stage name was Jive Nice. And one morning in May, he was on his way to his third job. I believe it was probably, I think they said it was about 3 o'clock in the morning or so. And he fell asleep at the wheel, drove his car off the side of the road, flipped it over, landed upside down in water, and unfortunately passed away. And Jive Nice, he was only wrestling for a couple of years at the time, and this was probably 10 years ago now that he's passed. And if there was anybody that I could wrestle right now, it would be the 10 years more experienced Jive Nice. Because that boy was so full of talent and promise. If he hadn't been a national superstar, I would eat my own foot. So, you know, I would love to see what he became. He was a good friend of mine. I'd love to see what he became, and I would love to have, some more matches with him once he got some experience and some chances to kind of stretch his wings out, under his belt. Like, I think that would have been fantastic. I've actually got a really good story about Jive Nice and all of us fighting the entire town of Saratoga, North Carolina. But the answer to the other answer to that question, it's probably a little bit more obvious. I never met the man, but I've seen his work a great deal. Obviously, he's big. He was a big factor in a lot of folks that I currently work with live. Larry Sweeney.
Larry Sweeney.
I would love an opportunity. opportunity to just kind of even sit and talk with him, you know, and experience any of these wonderful memories that, you know, that pretty much everybody I share a locker room with has of him, you know, not to mention like being able to be in the ring with him because, you know, again, it's just such a talented, charismatic individual, you know.
So, first off, hashtag 12 large baby, because I loved Larry Sweeney. I never got to meet him, would have loved to. That's definitely, if you ever ask me, like, who's the one person I would love to have on the podcast an interview with, he's always one of my top answers.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure he would have been amazing.
So, I'm interested, though, for previously you mentioned that you have a story about you fighting an entire town. I don't think I could let that story go by, so please, by all means, tell us that one.
All right, so here we go. I tell the story very infrequently, but this is a really good one. So there was a period of time when me and a bunch of buddies, we would pack the car up, and we would head down to Saratoga, North Carolina, and we would wrestle at a place called the IWA Danger Zone. Now, Saratoga is a literal one-stoplight town, and the stoplight that the town had just happened to have, like, I think one corner was a field, and then there was, like, an abandoned building, and then a gas station, and this, like, little strip mall kind of thing where the IWA Danger Zone was at. And they ran shows every Saturday, so we were down there constantly. And the entire town would just turn up to these shows at the IWA Danger Zone. There was a guy there who, his ring name was the Saratoga Stud. And he was, man, he was every bit of like probably 6'3". And if he wasn't 290 pounds, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't believe anything else. And he, as a Saratoga Stud, was the most flamboyant, Gorgeous George-esque character that you can possibly imagine. And as you can probably think, the folks in incredibly rural Saratoga were not big fans of the Saratoga Stud. And so one night, we're down there, we'd finished our matches, and we were kind of, a couple of us were kind of standing outside watching the rest of the show through these giant plate glass windows that were, you know, around the IWA Danger Zone. And Saratoga Stud is just kind of at ringside, mouthing off the fans, as he does. When he turned around, a fan jumped up and shoved him in the back over the guardrail. And I remember standing out there looking at my buddy Dave, and I looked at him and was like, uh-oh, that ain't gonna go well. And sure enough, man, the Stud turned back around and shoved this guy with one hand probably two rows back. And that was it. Like, everybody stood up. And man, I was like, as we're watching this unfold, I'm looking at Dave and I'm like, oh man, do you think we should go in there? This is probably gonna get real messy. And pretty much as soon as I finished that sentence, I see out of the locker room door, here comes Jive Nice. And Jive Nice, if you can imagine this, is probably he's probably 6'1", maybe 160 pounds. And he just comes barreling out of this side door and just dives right into the crowd. And following behind him is just like a bunch of bodies out of the locker room. And at that point, we're like, uh-oh, crap, we better run in. So we ran in the side door, and just mostly at that point, I think it was mostly just to save Jive, because I thought for sure that he was going to get, you know, pounded. So we run in, and man, it is just, it's practically a full-on riot. Guys are just grabbing each other, choking each other, throwing punches, so on and so forth. And I start trying to, like, me and my buddy Dave, we start trying to, like, kind of wade in and make our way to Jive, who, God bless him, is standing, like he's being pulled back by one guy. Meanwhile, he's drilling this dude, the guy that initially stood up and shoved the stud, just drilling him in the forehead with punches like he's got laser sights on his fist, man. it was the craziest thing. So we're just like, I think Moore was trying to contain and move this crowd out, and we eventually like kind of like shoved and pushed and kicked our way out into the street at Saratoga. And just like that, man, like we were all outside, like wrestlers and fans. We all just kind of like looked at each other for a second. Everybody stopped. We just kind of looked at each other and we're like, all right, we're good. We're good. Okay. And kind of calmly went back inside, restarted the show and finished it up. I swear.
Okay. That's the best part, that you actually finished the show. That's dedication right there, damn it.
There was going to be no stopping it. The guy that ran that show loved to do some 45-plus minute fans bring the weapons matches.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, so there was going to be no stopping that match, I guarantee it.
Wow. Now, I'm going to ask you, the visual I had on this one, do you know what Leroy Jenkins is?
Yes, yes. Okay.
Was that basically the picture we have here? Is
It was very similar to that if Leroy Jenkins hadn't gotten his entire party killed.
Right, exactly. So
yeah, yeah.
But the same basic idea. You guys are like, should we go in there? And then suddenly there your friend goes, you know, Leroy Jenkins, go to all Leroy Jenkins.
He just went straight out of like a cruise missile, man. It was to this day one of the craziest things I think I've ever seen.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I hate to segue to question two on this one here, but I'm going to. Question two of the infamous final two. We here at the IndyCast believe that all animals in nature have certain traits that help with their survival. Giraffes have long necks, rhinos have big horns, etc., etc. Our belief is that the human's trait is the ability to use tools. So, with that being said, Lucas Calhoun, if you could fight any animal, what animal would it be, and what weapon would you use?
All right, I'm prepped for this question. I did my research on the show, so I knew this one was coming. But number two, I've been telling anybody, and I mean anybody that knows me for as long as I can remember, anybody who will listen to me, I've been telling them that I think I could beat up a shark.
Okay.
It is my firm belief that if I were to find a shark of comparable size to myself in water, and I'll give it maybe like waist deep, right, that I could beat up a shark with nothing but my hands.
Oh, you're going straight up bare hands with it.
Absolutely, and here, let me explain to you why this is. So the shark, when you think about it, the shark only has one weapon, right? It can only bite at you.
True.
As a human being, you've got multiple weapons, right? Hands, feet. You can headbutt the shark if you really feel like it. However, the shark does have one distinct disadvantage, and that is it has to be in the water to breathe.
Right.
Right. So I'm thoroughly convinced that I could bear hug a shark, pick it up out of the water, and hold it close enough that it can't, like, turn, you know, shark can't really turn its head super well, like, kind of up and down.
Right.
So I could hold it close enough that it can't bite me, and I could suffocate the shark.
Wow.
Yeah.
That might be the best well-thought-out plan we've had here since Sidney Bacabella's answer of wanting to fight a kitten with a tack hammer, because he always puts himself over.
So. I'm telling you, I've been telling people this 40 years that I can fight and beat up a shark.
Nice.
This has been a longstanding theory of mine.
Well, and by the way, thank you also for doing your research and being one of our dozens and dozens for knowing that the question was coming. We appreciate that too. So, well, then you probably know what's coming next here, because this is a because you are from Chikara, and I know they're not always big on cursing, we will say one Mr. Brian Cage gives us his distinct permission to call this Get Your Stuff In. You guys can figure out what he normally calls it in other episodes. Go back and listen to us at soundcloud.com/WNRN. This is the opportunity to let people know where they can find your social media, your merchandise, things like that. Mr. Calhoun, the floor is yours.
Sure. So, easiest place to find me, man, is on Twitter. I'm That Old Juke Joint on Twitter. Same deal on Instagram. In fact, same deal on Gmail. ThatOldJukeJoint@gmail.com. Obviously, I'm all over Chikara, so see me whenever they're doing things. Keep an eye out for that. Also, coming up during the summer months, I'm gonna be spending some time doing many shows with Nova Pro up out of Northern Virginia area. They're really awesome. If you haven't checked them out, man, go scope them out. Their stuff is all over Powerbomb, Powerbomb.tv. I just recently started a new YouTube series where I sit down and I've been interviewing bands. I interviewed some guys with cool cars out at Aviva Las Vegas, just stuff that, like, from the rockabilly scene that I really want to share with you guys. So go scope that out too. You can find me over on YouTube. Just search me out, Luke's Calhoun. I forget exactly what I'm at there. It's still brand new and I'm bad at YouTube. I'm really terrible at self-promotion. Those are probably the easiest places to find me. I'm hoping to get out to a few new places, going on this year. There's a lot of guys that, I think are doing some really, really awesome stuff, that hopefully I can kind of make my way to, later on. Just keep an eye out, follow me on Twitter. It's probably the easiest way to keep up with me.
Very nice. Well, Lucas, once again, thank you for joining us today on the IndyCast. Definitely, it was a blast on that one here, and now everybody remember, you've got homework to go, you've got bands to go look up. So,
that's right. Yeah, everybody go look up. Look at Shannon and the Howlers. I'm telling you, man, they will change your life. In fact, they're the guys that I think I'm gonna. They're the band, one of the bands that I interviewed. That I think I'm gonna kind of edit up that video and drop it next.
Very nice.
So yeah, definitely take a look for those guys, man. Those guys are super crazy.
So, and as always, to all of our dozens and dozens, thank you once again for listening to the IndyCast today. I am solo. I am the Chad Allen. And until next time, we always say, deuces.